And yo, what is a cipher?
That's something that's gonna last. It's still gonna last. Like, oh yeah, you remember people gonna think like 20 years from now. Oh yeah, you remember when they brought that back?
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 247, a talk with the group Jericho Jackson, made up of producer Crisis and rapper Elzai. Crisis is best known for his work with the rap collective The Justice League, which counts among its members Ninth Wonder. As you'll hear, Crisis's ties with Ninth and the rest of Little Brother go back to the very beginning. He is currently a member of Ninth's production team, The Soul Council, which is affiliated with Ninth's label, Jamla Records. In addition to his North Carolina crew, Crisis has produced for Sean Price and Helta Skelta, Gene Gray, Evidence, Talib Kweli, Black Thought, and many others. Dedicated Cypher listeners will remember Elzai from our talk with him on episode 152. The Detroit rapper came to a lot of fans' attention during his time as a member of Slum Village. He followed that up with a staggering series of solo albums, including the Nas reinvention Elmatic and the deeply personal Lead Poison. Crisis and Elzai's recent joint album Jericho Jackson is more than a one-off. They're a group now, and thankfully plan to continue releasing projects. I caught up with Crisis and Elzai at their Manhattan Airbnb during a recent New York City trip. While you're listening, head over to thecyphershow.com to check out show notes, playlists, and our archives. When you're done with this episode, listen to our interview with former Little Brother member Big Pooh on episode 101. Also, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss future shows. When you're done listening, head over to patreon.com/thecyphershow and chip in. We spend a ton of time working on the show each week, and those donations really help us to keep it sustainable. Which is worth more, the cipher or that cup of delicious hipster vegan gelato? And now, here's Carl Weathers' favorite duo, Jericho Jackson. Crisis Elzai, Jericho Jackson.
What's happening?
Thanks for coming through. So you guys have known each other for like a dozen years, right?
Right.
So why a record now?
It just had to be the right time. Timing was everything. You know what I mean? The stars had to align. You know, things had to come together. Ninth pushed the button. You know what I'm saying? He hit me. He's like, yo, man, I'm about to fly Elzai out. What day you want to come out? He hit him. Like, what day you trying to come out? And it was off to the races from there.
Nice. And so you guys did this in basically a month and a half?
Like 2 months. Or something.
2 months. Yeah. And that was continuous, basically every day?
Basically. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? At the pace that we work at. You know what I'm saying? We had to find our rhythm. Once we found our rhythm,
So doing that in just one session like that, do you have any regrets? Is there anything you wish you could have taken more time on or had kind of another batch of sessions to finish or something?
Mm. Well, it's there. I mean, it's always something that you listen back to me like, if I did that a little differently. For me, it's probably like a couple of knob tweaks, but it's like, you know, little nitpicky type stuff that I hear that I know other people don't really care about. But, when it comes to things like that, I just, you know, watch out for it on the next project. Make sure I don't, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes it's not always about having the perfect product. You know what I mean? Sometimes you got to get something out there to the people and then just fix it later. You know what I'm saying? But doesn't mean that you don't put your best foot forward. It's just, you know, sometimes those little imperfections can be what make a project. You know what I mean? So, I really don't have any regrets. I'm kind of happy with how it came out, That's my approach, Al.
Yeah, Al, what about from here?
Not really. Like maybe just like maybe a change in like a vocal tone or something, like in one of the songs. But other than that, I'm good.
Was everything in this album done during those sessions, or did you come in with pre-existing beats? Did you come in with finished words?
Well, we pretty much worked on most of the album in one spot, all the songs except for like Friends. Friends was like the only song that we didn't record right during that time. Yeah. Friends was actually a couple years old.
I need true friends, and if you feel the way I feel, throw up your two hands. Same niggas that you drink with and you blew gas. Be the same niggas that'll try to knock you off your path where your shoe lands.
It's like a couple different versions of it. So yeah. You could say that's really the first song that we had. We had that one already in the stash. So I was going to use it for another project, but since we were already here together, so it was just like, all right, we'll just throw that on the project too.
What were the different versions? How are they different?
Oh, just different beats.
Oh, okay. But the lyrics were more or less the same.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Like we'll go and we'll cut a song, and then Ninth will be the executive producer, and we'll be like, yeah, maybe we should use this beat other than this beat.
Yeah, it's
cool. That's how
it happened a couple times.
Happened a couple times in the process, yeah.
And where do you get the idea for the interludes?
That is going to form an image of them in your mind. That is why a lot of us, we don't show our negative side to people, because otherwise we're not going to have...
Well, that was me just... really, that was just me just looking for pieces to... transitions to tie the songs together. I just looked at certain subjects and, it was just like, all right, this is what the song is about. So let's lead it in with this. I know with Cuff and Season, he had Paige Kennedy send some vocals where we all just put all of that together. Get that light though.
I got you right here.
Fine.
Oh, shit.
And then, the rest was just me just digging around the internet, finding stuff that relates to the songs and just, putting it together. I didn't know the person that I was using for the intro was a big deal like that. I'm learning about him now, apparently. But,
Are you comfortable saying who it is?
What's his name? Alan Watts that everybody's telling me?
Oh, yeah, the Zen guy.
A person who thinks all the time has nothing to think about except thoughts. By thoughts, I mean specifically chatter in the skull.
Alan Watts was a British philosopher who interpreted and popularized Eastern philosophy, and Zen Buddhism in particular, for a Western audience. His books are The Spirit of Zen, The Way of Zen, and The Book on the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are.
Yeah, everybody's telling me that's who it is. So, I had to go back and do some research, find out who the hell did I just sample. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that happens when you're making beats too, So, a lot of times, even with beats, like, it's just like I was digging for themes and sound bites the same. The way I approached it was the same way as sampling. You know what I mean? Sometimes when I'm sampling, I don't have time to dig into the artist, because if I do that, I'll get lost and lose my position in what I was thinking about when I was creating. So a lot of times I just gotta hear what I'm using, hear what I'm gonna use, knock it out, move on to the next, and then go back and do my homework.
And the group name, is there any particular significance to it being from Action Jackson?
Why do they call you Action anyway?
I think that you can.
Jericho Jackson was the name of Carl Weathers' titular character in the 1988 movie Action Jackson.
Did you just kind of think it was funny? Like, where'd that...
I mean, I'm a movie guy. That one kind of stuck, because we were actually... my first thought was The Crow, because doing research, I found out that even though The Crow takes place in Detroit, it was filmed in North Carolina.
Elzai and Crisis hail from Detroit and North Carolina, respectively.
Oh, there you go.
So I was digging around through The Crow trying to find something in The Crow that would fit, but... I ended up I had to leave that idea alone. So what I ended up doing was Action Jackson is probably one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. So and I saw the name, I saw his name was Jericho Jackson, the character, and I just threw that in. I threw that on the wall. Everybody looked at it and was like, you know what? Yeah. So we kind of that one stuck.
What was it like to make music that's not under either of your names? That's under like a different name. Did that free you in any way, or was it kind of challenging in any way?
I've been in a group before. This ain't the first time.
Justice League, we want you need.
Justice League.
Crisis is a member of the Away Team with Sean Boog. Both are members of the larger collective, the Justice League.
Nah, man. It was just... I mean, I feel like I'm always free when I'm recording. You know what I mean? So it didn't really do anything. Like, it was just like, if anything, it was just motivating. Like, okay, yeah, we got something. So let's take it down a recording tip. That's it, pretty much.
There's a song on it called Self-Made.
Self-made since 12th grade, this my calling. Every jewel I drop is money out the sky falling. L is that nigga. Some of y'all forgotten when I'm jotting. My pen bleed while yours be blood clot. I give them pain and give them mercy.
Inadvertently, Self-Made, probably after you made the song, became a bit of a sort of controversial phrase.
Really?
When Forbes used it to apply to Kylie Jenner, and a lot of people got mad. They called her the youngest self-made, you know, near billionaire. So what does self-made mean to you, if not to Forbes?
Oh, man, just meaning that you came up, like you came up the hard way to get to where you wanted to get to. Like,
right.
You know, you did things that, you know, that other people would probably like, you know, like, They had help in getting to a certain level, but you did it yourself. You know what I mean? So that's what it mean to me.
Basically, yeah. You come up, you got your hands dirty, you do the work, you know?
And Ella couldn't help but notice on that song, there's a like oblique reference to the Tamir Rice case.
Matches and gas chambers, a water gun in Ohio, an asteroid in the troposphere, speaking to us, a hopeless mere mortal.
You have that line about the water gun?
Water gun
in
Ohio?
Yeah.
Scary shit, ain't it?
Scary.
Yeah.
To the wrong people.
Yeah. You know why work that into the song, especially in just such an oblique, you know, kind of not, you know, not naming it directly kind of way?
Yeah, I was just describing, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was kind of like a metaphor, like just kind of describing like my level of artistry, pretty much. You know,
and you know, cuffing season obviously is a great concept. You know, relating the sort of cuffing season, it's the winter and you want a girlfriend or whatever, to actual handcuffs.
At a low volume, young boy lost freedom just to get respect from it. Couldn't tell a gut feeling from an upset stomach. Was it justified for a good for nothing reason? When them streets turn cold on you, it's cuffing season. Watch out for Johnny Law. Watch out.
Can you talk about coming up with that concept?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much I get all my concepts from like the instrumentals. So I'm really big on like writing whatever the instrumental tells me to put down. So when I heard the beat, I was like, oh, it just makes me think of cuffing season. Like it, well, actually it made me think of, you know, street activity. And then I was just like, man, what can I call this? And I was like, oh, cuffing season. I could flip it. And yeah, some people don't even know that's a thing, like cuffing season.
For real?
Yeah. Some people don't know that, but yeah, it's a double, yeah. I use it in a different way.
Right. Yeah.
Word up.
And I guess that's the thing with a lot of the songs. You know, there's kind of a central idea that's pretty, where you take an idea and kind of flip it around. And I liked 17, which I think you've talked about as a continuation of 2 16s from your last project.
She was pregnant at 16. You would think maybe if she felt the baby shift, she would not be as angry with herself for getting down on the first night in the back of a Crown Vic because them sounds kick. Now 17. You wouldn't be the youngest corpse ever seen. For a pair of Air Jordan size 11 clean, you would hustle during REM hours with you.
How do you see those as being connected?
I mean, just, you know, I had an idea of like taking the, you know, because 2 16s is about like 2 16-year-old kids. And something happens in the story. 17 is about like a 17-year-old kid, you know, so it's like, you know, I thought about making a continuation, like, you know, doing a track about an 18-year-old kid. So, yeah. So it really has no, like, they don't tie into each other like that. It's just, you know, the ages.
So when you're writing something like that, that's a, you know, more or less a story, right? It's about a character. How much of the character do you envision? Like, do you have a history for the character beyond what we hear in the song, the way actors will sometimes, like, imagine a backstory for who they're playing beyond the lines they're saying?
And sometimes I might pull from like maybe like characteristics of people that I know. And then sometimes I might just make up a character, you know, just how like, you know, people do in the movies, like when they write a script or something. So, and I always try to be like very visual when I'm writing. So, you know, so yeah, I have to see it before I put it down on paper.
So the record started then, Crisis, you would play beats first. Is that how most of the songs started?
Most of them, yeah. most of them.
And you said in an interview that L had a very interesting way of writing. What is your interesting way of writing?
I mean, I won't go into too much detail, but yeah, I mean, you know, I got various ways of writing. Like I write in my head, like I write in my phone, you know. It's different ways I do it, you know, pretty much. There you have it.
Very different. Never, yeah. It's something you've never seen before, but yeah. The way he pulls it together is just like, oh, all right. Because you'll kind of not know what's happening for a minute, but then you'll be like, oh, okay. Oh, all right. Then you get into the rhythm of it, and then, you know, once you get into that rhythm, once I got into the rhythm, I figured out that what was happening, we was gold from there.
Yeah.
You know, it was off to the races.
And you have that great line on Brigettes about Hitchcock.
Yeah.
The referencing the famous photo of him.
Puffing a cigar with a bird.
Yeah. Great line.
Getting high like when the pitch knock. Puffing a cigar with a bird. I think I'm Hitchcock. What I write is horrifying. It cracks the head of my foes.
So, Crisis, you said you're a movie guy. Obviously, you reference Hitchcock. What are your favorite Hitchcock movies?
I don't have a favorite Hitchcock movie quite yet. Probably one of my favorite movies, period, though, is Fight Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite Hitchcock movie or your?
I'm trying to think. Is Psycho?
Yeah, that's one.
That's one right there.
That song, Brigette, I guess. Mm-hmm. How you pronounce it?
Brigettes. Yeah.
So what's the title phrase? I read it as kind of like a mix of baguette and regret. Is that?
No. That's like a watch, pretty much. Yeah.
Shows what I know.
Timeless piece of work, pretty much.
Jewels.
Jewels.
Gotcha.
Gems.
Breguet is a brand of luxury watches founded in 1775. It's one of the oldest surviving watchmaking brands. It was bought by Swatch in 1999.
Amazing. And so there's a couple things about overthinking on that initial track that I really love. There's one moment in it where you kind of stick an extra syllable in shrapnel.
Yeah.
To kind of force the rhyme in kind of a funny, interesting sort of look at me way.
NYLA on trips having meetings up in Capitol, which could have blew me up and had my haters ducking shrapnel, but it wasn't meant to be. I used to wonder why I collapsed.
How do you know when that works? Like when that kind of like mispronouncing a word on purpose is a good thing to do and when it might be a little forced?
Pretty much with the rhythm, pretty much. Like whatever the pocket is, like I try to write in specific pockets. And style a little bit. So, yeah, I just knew it worked because it hit a certain way on the snare. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
That's the beauty about hip hop and art is when you can really, Elzai is one of those MCs I like to call word benders. You know what I'm saying? Because basically you could just, you know, you could just flip and flex a word around to make it, you know what I'm saying, suitable to what you're saying and where you don't lose the meaning behind it, yet you're still able to maintain your rhythm and your voice. Do the thing, so you know.
Yeah,
that's an art that a lot of people overlook because in a lot of cases we mispronounce words just in speaking. So you just kind of I know one thing I like to tell a lot of rappers or MCs when I'm producing is just like, dude, this is art. Fuck your grammar. Get out what you gotta say. You know what I'm saying? People gonna figure out in the context. Like, and if they don't, then you know. If they don't catch on to it, they'll catch on it later. So you could probably have something, you could probably mispronounce something, people probably won't catch on to what it is till like 5 years down the line. Like, look how long it took us to realize that Q-Tip was saying, relax yourself, girl, please settle down.
Relax yourself, girl, please settle down. Relax yourself, girl, please settle down. Relax yourself, girl, please settle down.
It took us 20 years to figure that shit out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Definitely. So... Yeah. You know, these are beautiful things. It just ups the replay value.
And, you know, you got different accents, you know what I'm saying? And it just get, words get passed down and get flipped. But, you know, you got people like Eminem, Black Thought, that Ben Word.
Yeah, he's...
Right, yeah, Black Thought, that's something he's done his whole career to really great effect.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he kills competitors all day. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what he do, man. That's what he do.
Japan from the reservoir, serve the spa. The injured raw predator of a competitor. I send him seas where the paramedics are. At first, I'm like, no, I'm nonchalant from afar.
Yeah, he's a master of that. L, you know, the last time we talked, it was right around Lead Poison time, which was a very different kind of record.
Mm-hmm.
More kind of directly personal, more about some kind of depression issues that you were going through. The This one is kind of a mix of reflective songs and concepts and stuff that's just kind of pure wordplay, I guess. Can you kind of talk about that divide, like dividing those, you know, those things up?
We mean like just the
how do you know kind of what you want each, you know, why have those different kinds of things on this record? How do you know which beat is going to get, you know, which type of material?
Man, like I say, like whatever the beat tells me to write, like if I feel something, I hear it, that's where the concept comes from. So yeah, like, you know, that's why sometimes when the beats, certain beats had changed at first, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's going to work, but it ended up working. You know what I'm saying? Because like I say, I always write to the beat, man. And that's where I pull everything from, you know, wordplay, you name it. Like, I don't really, like, people might think I rhyme the same all the time until you break down my rhymes and be like, okay, all right, well, he's actually riding a beat when he does it. Yeah.
Nice. And who do you listen to for inspiration as far as that end of things, like the rhythmic end of things?
As far as right now, I don't really listen to nobody, but coming up, you know, I listen to, like, Busta Rhymes. I listen to Black Thought, you know, Lord Finesse, like Big Daddy Kane, Slick Rick, that kind of thing.
You ever get rhythm ideas from like instrumentalists, horn players, drummers, anything like that?
I wish I could say that to sound cool, but no, I don't. I mean, I probably, I'll just like if it's like whatever the beat is or how it sounds, I'll find like certain pockets to create rhythms like that. Cause sometimes when I write, I'll like mumble the words first.
Right.
To kind of figure it out.
Like, and then fill in the words later. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Crisis, this obviously is not the first time you worked together. Crisis, you did something on Elmatic.
I did. It was the remix for Detroit State of Mind. It's one of the hidden cuts on there.
Yeah, rappers, I monkey flip them, kangaroo box them, out fox them, Hannibal cannibal ox them. My lines hook, they're like fishermen, they're reeling they bait from Great Lakes.
Yeah, what was it like going in and having to reinvent one of the most famous beats in hip-hop?
I don't know how to start this. Rappers, I'm monkey flipping with the funky rhythm. I be kicking, musician, inflicting composition of pain. I'm like Scarface sniffing.
I didn't really reinvent it. I just kind of wanted to recreate the vibe my own way, if it makes sense. Especially since, you know, I didn't do it. I didn't recreate the beat. You know, if you listen to it, it's a whole different scheme.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I mean, but the feeling is still there. And that's just basically what I was trying to convey. You know what I'm saying? Some slapping ass drums, some dark chords. You know what I'm saying? Some shit that he can like do the slow flow, where he can do that same slow flow pattern where everything fits and where it's just the mood. It's just really just my take on it and my spin on things, just to, you know, just throw my flavor to it.
That must have been interesting for you composing, because you knew more or less what his rhythm was
going
to be.
Yeah, I already knew where it was going. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Being the fact that, you know, all right, we're doing New York State. We're recreating New York State of Mind. All right, bet. Well, it's Detroit State of Mind in this case.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we're creating Detroit State of Mind, which is pulling from New York State of Mind. So it's just like, I'm just trying to pull that vibe in what I envision or what I imagine Detroit much State of Mind would sound like. Makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And on the record, you use the famous Lafayette Afro Rock Band.
That's horns for Self-Made.
On Self-Made, yeah.
Right.
The Lafayette Afro Rock Band's 1972 track, Darkest Light, has been sampled in well over 100 songs, including Jay-Z's Show Me What You Got, Public Enemy's Show 'Em What You Got, and Rex and Effects' Rum Shaker.
What you want me to do? I'm sorry. I'm back. Let's go get him, Chuck. Hey, hey, hey.
Public Enemy number one.
Show what you got. Show what you got. Show what you got.
Public Enemy number
one. All I wanna do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom.
How do you use something that familiar and actually kind of make it sound exciting?
I just
and
do.
New.
Nah, because it's like, it's
were
like,
you scared to use that, that horn line?
No, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait to get somebody to use it. Real. I had that. I was sitting on that beat for probably about 8 months and I'm like, yo, this will work right now. Because, okay, I believe in the 20-year cycle. Everything cycles.
How do you mean?
Everything, all trends and ideas and zeitgeist, it changes every 20. Well, it flips back every 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, during the 90s, everybody was, you know, everything was taught, everything was pulling from the 70s. So now here we are, 2018, pulling from the 90s. You know what I mean? Last decade, we were in the early 2000s pulling from the 80s. You know what I'm saying? So it everything happens in 20-year droves. You know what I'm saying? That's why, you know, people ask me about the state of hip-hop right now. I think it's going back to where we're getting back to what was going on 20 years ago. You know what I mean? With it's different now because of the internet, but a lot of the ideas and the things that we're talking about, and you know, it's the same. It's even down to the same real hip hop and commercial hip hop. It's coming back to that argument now. You know what I'm saying? It's the same argument that we was having when I was listening to Wu-Tang. You know what I mean? It's just the characters are
right.
different.
Is it Wu-Tang or Puffy?
Right.
Yeah.
That was the argument. Wu-Tang or Puffy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Are you listening? Because, you know, was it Stakes Is High and It Was Written came out the same day?
Mm-hmm.
And people either went Stakes Is High or It Was Written. And then you had that rare breed of folk who did both.
De La Soul's critically beloved but low-selling Stakes Is High and Nas's more mainstream It Was Written, which sold millions and remains his highest-selling album to this day, were both released on July 2nd, 1996.
You know what I'm saying? So now you kind of got everybody now where they're either going Kendrick or Cole, but then you got that breed of people who do both. You know what I mean? So, you know, I see the same arguments. It's just different characters. And, you know, like I said, you know, people were complaining. I know when was it Tory Lanez did the Brownstone record?
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of people older than me that was complaining.
You were one of your niggas, but wasn't whipping his foreign.
Tory Lanez sampled Brownstone's 1994 hit If You Love Me on his 2016 song Say It. For what it's worth, Brownstone's Nikki Gilbert said Lanez did a quote, great job.
But it was like, but you wasn't complaining when Puffy was rapping over Let's Dance.
Now my dividends be the new Benjamins. Uh-huh. Hoes of all complexions, I like cinnamon. Mate, you got some hoes, well nigga, send them in. What you waiting for? Let the freak show begin. How they came in a truck.
Come on. Like, that was your jam. Like, people, my parents was bitching about Puffy doing that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So now you become my parents. And you ain't but 5 years older than me.
Yeah. If it's any consolation, I talked to Ron Lawrence about that record a couple days ago, and yeah, Bowie took all the money.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, these things happen. Like, these things happen, but it's like, at the same time, it's like, we're not going to, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and play the bitch and moan game when I can join in on the fun. I love sampling, so this is just a new challenge for me. It's a challenge for me to sample.
How do you treat sampling these days?
I just treat it.
Just do it.
I just do it. Like, yeah. I just do it. It's really about a feeling. You know what I'm saying? It's a feeling that I'm trying to catch when I'm making records. Like, you know what I mean? It's not even about making the illest chop anymore. It's just, some of it is about being clever and the rest of it is me just creating a pure feeling. You know what I mean? That's just where my roots are. So like I said, I have like a million different ways of approaching samples now too. So it's like, you know, it's all about how it feels, man. It's about the feeling and who I want and the type of people that I'm trying to speak to. So
do you worry about while you're in the process of creating where the sample comes from? Do you worry about like, oh, that label's defunct or that person's known to take a lot of the money or that person doesn't clear stuff?
No, that's not till after the song is made.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, or like, not while I'm making the beat, because I'm gonna make the beat regardless. I don't care. You know what I mean? I'm gonna make the beat. It's where, how can I get this after? That's an afterthought. Like, how can I get this out? Where can I get this out? You know what I'm saying? Oh, who wrote the song? Oh, such and such wrote the song. Let's reach out to them. But that, like I said, that's an afterthought. Like, that's after we done, or if I report, or if I start working with a certain artist and I'll be like, oh, okay. Okay, yeah, there it is. With the self-made thing, it was just like, oh, yeah, we just need to bring this back. And nobody's flipped it like that. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. So people take the whole line generally.
Normally people just take the horn break.
Yeah, just
they
yeah,
just take the horn break, and I'm like, I'm hearing the song, and I'm like, and I heard it slowed down. When I heard it, I heard it in my head slowed down, and was like, yeah, that fits the scheme right now. You know what I'm saying? Where music is going, that actually fits where the music is going right now. So. Nice. You know, and that's something that's going to last. It's still going to last. Like, oh, yeah, you remember people going to think like 20 years from now. Oh, yeah, you remember when they brought that back. You know what I mean? So
any other breakbeats you're dying to bring back?
Hell yeah. I got a whole bunch, man. Like I said, I got whole files of those, man. I got stashes and stashes, man. Me and Knife, man, we was going, actually the whole Soul Council, man. We was in the studio one. We was doing 90s week. The whole, you know what I'm saying? So like we was just going through a whole bunch of 90s R&B joints, just, you know, going through records, like, oh, yeah, you remember this Jodeci joint? I'm a flip. We was having a competition, man, like flipping Case, we flipping SWV, flipping Jodeci. We just did that for a whole week. Throwing that energy around in the studio.
Nice. Not even with a particular end goal in mind.
Nah. Because if you look at it too, like 17 is people know the 17 sample. Both of them. People know both 17 samples. Come on.
Sample police, so we're not going to tell you, but you can figure it out if you want.
So, and that was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Yeah. So, Chris, one of the things about you that when I was kind of looking back around is I was surprised to learn that you started out producing basically on software, and it wasn't until you'd been producing 3, 4, 5 years.
Longer than that.
Let you had a MP, right? Maybe like longer, 6 years?
Longer than that, man. I didn't get my first MP till like 08, really. 07. Yeah, 07. Oh, no, 08. 08. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was doing Fruity Loops, like, because this is what I had. Like, I had I started on a demo version of Fruity Loops 2 in the year 2000. Okay. And then I didn't get the full version till like a year later. I was actually on campus in Winston-Salem State University, and I had met Knife like the year before. I met Knife when I was like 18. I'm 36 now. All right, so I met Knife when I was 18, and we kept in touch. We just kept in touch for a minute, and then I bumped into him. I bumped into him while I was in college, and he had just moved back into town, and he saw that I was using the demo version of Fruity. And he hadn't quite touched it just yet. But he saw me using it. He was like, yo, I got a homeboy that got a full version at the crib. I'll bring it to you. So he came back a couple weeks later, gave me the full version of 3. And, you know, I made beats. He came back a couple weeks later. I played him a couple beats I did. And he came back 2 months later. Yo, I made something on Fruity. And it was all to the races from there. Yeah. It was really all to the races from there.
And when you finally got your hands on a machine, how was it different than your expectations?
So I didn't get my hands on a machine until probably like 2007. Yeah, 2007. That's when I got the MPC. And then I want to say a year after that, I had an ASR-10 rack mount. And then that died. I think a year later, it overheated on me. So and then I found somebody who was selling their ASR-10 keyboard. So I went and got that. And then we ended up moving out of the Chop Shop. When Chop Shop shut down, I ended up going to Reason. And then we got back when the Jamla thing got started, Knife hit us up. He was like, yo, Native Instruments, they're going to send these joints called Machine, and they want us to try it out. I sat with that thing for about like 6 hours and no instruction booklet or nothing, just, okay. Okay. This is how it works. I went from like 11 o'clock at night to like 11 in the morning, just and didn't go to sleep until I made a beat. My ex was mad at me. But yeah, I don't care. It got me where I'm at now.
Yeah. Al, so I was thinking about the last time I saw you around the time of Lead Poison. How did people react to that record, and particularly the idea of you being kind of so open about your personal issues around that? How did fans kind of respond to that? Do you have people saying like, I went through that too type stuff?
Definitely. I was getting that from fans. I was getting that from interviewers. And around that time, you wasn't really hearing too many people talk about, you know, what was going on personally or like mental health. And it seemed to be the thing now. Like, You know, you hear it a lot. You see it a lot. What the crazy part about it is I was getting people that was hitting my DMs up with like tattoos or like the cover art.
Wow.
Yeah, like on their arms. You know what I'm saying? Like one person like sent a DM to me. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So I posted it. And another person saw that post and sent me a DM of they tattoo. And they was just expressing to me, man, how they felt about it. And they felt that I was a voice for them. And it was a record that was therapeutic for them. So, I mean, it went well with the fans.
Are there other solo projects in the offing? I know you're busy promoting this, but, you know, what else is being planned?
Yeah, I got some things in the works. But, yeah, we, you know, Jericho
Old
still.
Jericho.
Yeah, we at Jericho.
And so this is a group, right? This is not a one-off project, at least.
No, this is a group.
It's an actual group. At what point in the process did you realize that?
I mean, we kind of had the intention of just doing a joint project, but I don't know when it became like we started getting, I guess, the reactions, you know what I'm saying, especially with the road. I can't really pinpoint when we decided, okay, yeah, we need to just keep doing, we need to hit these people again. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know when it hit when we needed to do that, but it's definitely based on the reaction and on the tour and, you know, how people have been reacting to the album. Like, we dropped that album in, what, February? And, you know, it's still growing. You know what I mean? Normally you drop an album, people talk about it for 2 weeks and it goes away. Yeah. It hasn't been the case with us. You know what I'm saying? The people who knew about it are still talking about it. And on top of that, it's still catching on to the people who didn't know about it. So.
And when it hit like everybody, like at the, like me, Crisis, Ninth, like, yeah, we got to go and do another one of these.
Crisis, would you describe like a particular sound of Jericho Jackson? Like, is there a different sound to the beats on this as opposed to the Away Team or, you know, something you might do a beat for another artist? Like, is there a particular kind of like coherent sound to this, to Jericho Jackson?
As far as me, it's a more mature production sound. It's not about me making making the most tricky, complicated, you know, backflippy beats or nothing like that. No, it really was more of a straight ahead approach that I was trying to take on this project, especially with this one, with us being new, introducing ourselves as Jericho Jackson. I kind of wanted to keep it straightforward and, you know, give everybody that dirty shit, really. You know what I'm saying? Give some straightforward, but dirty, but clean, all at the same time. So it's like something open. I wanted the production to be open. So, because LZA says a lot of shit. And
right,
I don't
you
want
to make
nobody,
sure people hear.
And I don't want nobody to miss what he's saying.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I want to give people just enough so you can rock to the rhythm without losing what he's saying. And that was really my goal. And just be mature about it. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't really trying, you know, it wasn't about me being the star of the show. It's about us. It's not about either one of us being the star of the show.
Right.
It's about us being a unit. And I was trying to definitely get that across in the production. Nobody's stealing the show here. This is both of us putting our crafts together to make one. You know what I'm saying? And that was the sound that I was going for.
And I know I was reading interviews with you back from like 05, 06 when you started, you know, getting a fair amount of attention, at least at first. And, you know, even back then you were collecting drums. Mm-hmm. So now you've been collecting drums for almost 20 years. Do you ever use the same drum sounds twice?
Hell yeah. Who doesn't?
Right.
Who doesn't? Come on.
Yeah. Right.
Who doesn't? I can't think of anybody who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't. Like, hell yeah.
Nice. And are you still actively collecting? Like, are you still kind of on the lookout for new sounds at
Always.
This point?
Always. I mean, just because I got it don't mean I use it right then neither. Because it's always about timing with me too. It's about timing and feeling. Like, sometimes I have a sample chop in my head that I just can't get out until, or I'll go to the same sample like 3-4 times just to make sure, just to see like different ways to chop it. And then sometimes I have drums that I don't use for like a year. You know what I'm saying? I'll just be sitting on them because I'm not, you know, I haven't figured out how to match music to them yet. You know what I mean? So I just have a whole lot of shit that I just be sitting on and just be collecting, but still be creative at the same time.
And, you know, without outing any particular sources, or is there like an era of or label of drum sounds that you particularly like and find yourself going back to?
Nah, it's really about how they feel. It's really about how I feel, and am I not tired of using them yet? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, cause it's certain drums that there's drum sounds that I've been using since damn 2009. I still use them. Cause it still works, man. I think I read somewhere that there's another producer, man. He just used the same kick. He just every time he do a session, mm-hmm. he'll pull the kick out of the. Every time he puts out a mix or a song, he'll just pull the kick out of that session and drop it in to another beat, and just get it mixed, watch it get mixed and all of that, and then pull it back out, drop it back in the machine, watch the engineer mix it, pull it back out. I think it was Rockwilder that said that shit. But yeah, you know what I mean. It was just, you know. Yeah, I don't go to that extreme with it, but because you know, with me, it's like there's different ways that you can flip the drum sound. Like if I want it to be clean, I know what group of drums I want from that. If I want a dirty, dark, like I said, it's just different textures that I know I like to play with. You know what I mean? So I'm gravitating more toward like natural sounding drums. You know what I'm saying? So.
And that's actually something else I wanted to ask. Since you've been doing stuff for so long, how would you describe your style has changed since like you started really making music like 2003 or so, started making music that was kind of getting out there a little bit?
I've definitely grown, and I guess you could kind of say I'm still transitioning, but I'm making that transition from a beat maker to a producer. That has, and it start, you know, it's going to come out in the beats, obviously. It has been, hopefully it has been so far, but
what does that mean to you?
Beat making versus producing. Beat making, you just making the beats. You know what I'm saying? You're not really putting much into it. You just made the beat. Producing though, that goes beyond making the beat. Like you're actually have a hand. You're being hands on with the song from front to back. You know what I mean? Which can be a little weird at first because, you know, especially dealing with certain artists, you know, they feel like if they're taking production cues, that, you know, it's an insult to their craft. You got to let them know. That's another part of producing too, where you kind of got to like put your foot down and produce sometimes. You know what I mean? Because you know, especially when you know what you're looking for and people are working with you, they want what you bring to the table. And for me, that's not going to be just a beat. You know what I mean?
What's one of the first songs you did that you can remember, you know, actually producing on, guiding the artist, being involved, like from beginning to end?
Definitely with the Jamless stuff. It's all been with the Jamless stuff. I can't really, you know, sometimes with the Away team, like it'll be sparks here and there where, you know, I've started figuring things out. But I really learned the most when I started rapping myself. That's when I figured out, oh, this is how I gotta tell people to do stuff. You know what I mean? And then, big shout out, you know, just big shout out to my team because they did, you know, Knife, he gave me a certain way. And then, you know, Terrace Martin helped me with some stuff too. I ain't gonna lie. You know, not being afraid to go ahead and jump on the mic and do stuff for us, for people and all of that stuff too. So I just, you know,
Like literally telling them, say the line like this.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, doing like little mumble tracks and, you know, I get like little hook ideas and stuff like that. So, you know, that's kind of how my part on Talking About came about, really, because, you know, we was brainstorming about the record and I just threw the mic on real quick and mumbled that hook out. And Knife heard it. He was like, oh, we're keeping that.
What you talking about? Let me tell you what I'm talking about. Is you gonna stay? Is you gonna be out?
I was like, really?
You keeping what?
He's like, we're keeping that. I was like, oh, you don't want me to finish off the end? He's like, nah, keep that. I was like, all right. So then I had to sit down and make it work.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like, all right, how do I make that work? And then, you know, and then I just left the spot open for L so he could come in and finish with his part. And then, boom, the rest is just, you know, production. All right, we're going to get Heather to do this. All right, this part is going to drop out here. This is going to sound like this. This part's going to be in the front. This is going to be in the back. All right, boom.
Yeah. And you worked a lot with Sean P,
yeah,
who we were lucky enough to have on the show before he passed.
Dope.
Were you in the studio with him when you did stuff? You worked on him with a couple different projects.
On the first two albums. We were in the studio together on the first, well,
on his solo, on the solo stuff.
All right, we were in the studio together for Onion Head. Bye-bye.
One of his most beloved songs.
It can end the life of your fam. Niggas know Sean nice with the hands. Watch me punch up your face, dig in your pockets, leave you right where you stand. Got a dumb bitch that live in Japan. Black belt, suck dick.
We were in the studio together for Onion Head and Bye-bye.
Call it, you call, you off. Yeah. Hey, yo, yo. Clint licking, big dick sticking, shorty wild party stop out.
Which was done around the same time, which was done during the same week Knife and Buckshot was working on Chemistry. And then Smith & Wesson came down and I gave Smith & Wesson a couple of records for the Reloaded project. One of them was Gun Talk, and I forgot what the other one was. I'm sorry for that.
You could be a gangster, hustler, pimp, or a gun buster, but
Crisis produced Gun Rap and Sic 'em Son on Smith & Wesson's 2005 album, Smith & Wesson Reloaded.
But then Sean, for Jesus Price, he started Jesus Price in North Carolina. So, yeah, he went and got a bunch of beats from me. He got a couple beats from Knife. I made a phone call to Illmind, like, yo, let's go. Let's do the thing. Which is another thing about being a producer as well. Is like, you know, just because you didn't make the beat don't mean you don't have to produce the record neither. You know what I'm saying? That's another thing, too. Like, I learned that. Working with Knife as a team, working with the Soul Council as a team, we all have a say on what happens in the records. You know what I'm saying? So that's another thing too. So, you know, like if I ain't got what we need for the album, I know who does. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, because like I said, we just got done working with the Smith & Wesson album. So
I've heard great things. Rock told us about that when he was on the show because he was at one of the sessions for it.
Right.
Did a verse and he was thrilled about it. Even was that last year we talked to him?
Yeah, that was about the time we was working on it. So yeah, it was just crazy, man. Like, cause like whatever, I know Knife was like, okay, we're gonna get Knife. You know, it was like Knife would hit me like, yo, we need a certain record like this, and I'd be like, nah, I want Knox to make that beat. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know what I'm saying? Or he'll be like, okay, well, I want Eric G to make this beat. You know what I'm saying? Or he'll take off one of his beats and switch it out for somebody else's shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because that's just how we operate as a team. It's not about a star of the show. It's about making the final product.
And what was, like, going back to P for a second, what was he like to be in a session with?
Man, it was hilarious, man. It was a learning experience, man. It was story time. It's everything that you could think of, man. Like, yeah, man, don't get him started on story time, man.
I believe it.
Because he loves to tell stories, man. But he tells, like, some of the best stories, man. Like, there's so many of them, man. I don't know which ones I could talk about, but, yeah.
Yeah. Were you happy that Onion Head kind of became, you know, maybe one of his best known solo songs?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely, first of all, man, I'm happy. I was happy just to do the record, just to be, you know what I'm saying? Just the fact that, you know, you got to think, man, that's over like 12, 15 years ago, man. So it's like, and I'm just getting my feet wet out here. I didn't even have the away team stuff out yet. You know what I'm saying? So, and here I am, you know, listening to one of my, here I am working with some of my favorite artists that I was listening to from high school. You know what I mean? So I was just swimming in that. You know, I was high off of that. You know what I mean? So
right, because you got Buckshot.
Yeah,
Buckshot KRS gets in there at a certain point. Or was that a little later?
That was much later on. That was much later on. I got in through that just talking with Buckshot. I sent some beats to Buckshot and he was like, oh yeah, he didn't even tell me what it was for. He was like, yo, just send me some beats. I was like, boop. And he was like, oh word, by the way, I'm working on this album with KRS, so I'll get it back at you. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
What was it like when you finally heard your music, KRS-One rapping on one of your beats?
Class in session, y'all late and shit. Buckshot, KRS is some amazing shit.
Crisis actually produced two songs on the 2009 KRS-One Buckshot collaborative album, Survival Skills. The tracks are Amazing and Hear No Evil.
It was just a dope experience. Like, yo, like, it felt good. I didn't even meet him till last year. I didn't meet KRS until last year. He didn't like, so like, so when I met him, it was just like, yo, you know, I did these records with Buckshot. He was like, oh word, you know. So we actually had the time to sit down and chat a little then, but it was just like I said, it was just a dope experience, like just working, and it's an honor, and I'm just happy, and it was confirmation that I'm in the right place doing the right thing, because you know, the people that I grew up listening to want my music. They want to work with me.
Including, like we mentioned, Black Thought, mm-hmm. who you have, you know, obviously your whole team worked on his solo
right.
EP, and you have at least one beat is credited to you.
I got one on it. I did the thank you record.
Thanks for the memories. First and third of the month, check deliveries. Agencies in the early 80s for giving cheese to families with parents who had drug dependencies.
Yeah, that was just crazy. Knife, just, you know, once again, that was a night that was, you know, shout out to Knife, man, because he was basically like, he just hit everybody up and was like, shoot me some beats. We're going to do this Black Thought shit. All right.
So it was as much a surprise to you as to everyone else. It was as much a surprise to you as to everyone else that was happening.
I mean, we knew. I knew he was working on it. I just didn't know what was happening with it. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I had heard the record and, you know, it was just a waiting process to see, you know, which way they was going to move. So, and then everything happened. He did the freestyle and then boop.
Off yeah, to the that races. Was, he did that was that, one hell of a launch.
Yeah, he did that flex joint, man. It was out. It was off to the races from there.
Hawk Studios, we here. Let's go, Earns.
Let's do it.
I'm sorry for your loss. There's somebody dead in the car, and it's probably one of yours.
Black Thought's almost 11-minute freestyle on Funkmaster Flex Show in December 2017 was a sensation, earning the rapper press in Rolling Stone, NPR, and The New Yorker, and even an interview segment on The Tonight Show.
Amazing. We were both just at Soundset. Okay. You were working sound for Rhapsody.
Yeah.
You've been doing stuff with her from almost the very beginning,
probably right after the very beginning. Yeah. There was a time when, you know, I wasn't around for the baby steps with Jamila. Mm-hmm. I probably came around on like phase two. When Knife came to me and was like, yo, I'm starting this Jamila thing. You know, there was a point in time where I was in between Hall of Justice and Jamila. I'll just mm-hmm. put it that way. So around that time is when Knife came to me and was like, yo, look, such and such is gonna go down. And I'm trying to put this beat team together for the label that I'm starting. Come through. And I came through, and there it is. You know what I'm saying? The rap was already there. You know.
And one of the things I talked to her when I talked to her was, you know, how she is still growing, the things she's trying to work at.
Yeah.
How have you seen her grow as an
incredible, man.
Artist.
She has a focus and a fire about her. Yes, I said fire. Rap, if you listen it, fire, motherfucker. But
why is that a thing?
We'll get to that later.
we'll talk off mic. It'll be great.
All right, cool. But I mean, she has a fire and a sense of focus about her that I actually admire and look up to and aspire to have. Like just watching her grow and just turn out and keep cranking and keep cranking and keep plugging away and keep plugging away, man, until she got until, you know, the results started kicking in, man. And even after the results kicked in, she's still pushing and plugging away. So like she's watching her growth is just, it's beautiful and inspiring at the same time. Really been inspiring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and now she's on television.
Rhapsody had an episode of the Netflix series Rapture dedicated to her.
Yeah, she's on TV. She's everywhere, man. We got the, you know, Grammy nominations and, you know, Jamila's the squad, you know? Yeah.
Can we expect some more Soul Council Black Thought music?
That's not a question for me.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
That's not a question for me.
Fair enough. You've been doing shows as Jericho Jackson. How's that been going?
It's been going great, man. We just did a show in Buffalo a couple of nights ago. That was amazing. So, yeah, we're on the second leg now. We did a West Coast leg, and now we're doing the East Coast Midwest right now.
Nice. And do you mix up the shows with your own solo material as well, or is it just collaborative stuff?
Yeah. It's like, you know, we go through everything. We go through the Jericho. We go through songs Crisis produced, like we'll go through like the albums, like, you know, my previous albums that I've had in the past, and we just mix it all up like a pot of gumbo, man, to try to give it to the people.
And do you think that you'll ever do another kind of tribute project since Elmatic was so successful?
I thought about it, like, and I think a lot of the fans want to see me do a tribute. One of the big ones would be where I hear a request often about is Group Home.
Just to hear you rapping over, yeah, just you know, me,
right, yep.
Key, you know, classic premiere Right. Peak level premiere.
Right, yeah. Right, right. That, and I think the second request is like some Tribe.
That would be super interesting, I think, just because of the way you take on Elmatic, you took stuff and kind of flipped it, but kept a lot of the same patterns and things like that. It'd be so interesting to hear that with Tribe.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it might be something I might toy with like later on in the future.
All right. I think we'll count one vote for me.
Word up.
Nice. And Crisis, what else are you up to beyond shows for Jericho?
Yeah, we got the shows for Jericho. Like I said, me and the Soul Council, we worked on the Smith & Wesson album. And then after that, it's more Jamla. Mm. Yeah.
And what's upcoming in the Jamla world?
More Jamla.
Fair enough. Rev said there might be another compilation album when I talked to her. Is that...
That's what she said?
That's what she said.
Awesome.
Okay. You are a tough one to crack. Nice. Yeah. And I guess kind of one final, I just wanted a little bit to kind of get your take around, you know, how, what happened around Little Brother? Like, how did the crew that coalesced around Little Brother kind of first come together?
I admit, Knife, when I was 18, I met Sean Dawn when I was probably like 16 or 17. And I met Knife. He introduced me to Knife like right after I graduated high school. Like I said, and I ran into Knife when I was in college again. I got into some trouble when I was in college, so I ended up having to move back home. But Knife ended up moving back home around the same time. I was listening to Duke's radio station, which would play hip hop on Friday nights. And then I heard Knife playing a record with this artist named Def Con, who later on changed his name to Sean Boog, who we ended up being the away team later on. So, I just met, I called Knife, man, after that song went off and heard him talking on the radio. So I called up there and he had Fonte come scoop me up. And when I got to the studio, they were working on an interlude called Home, which was on the Listening. Come on, this goes all the way back to like 2001, 2000. This is a long story. I got to do my own interview for this shit.
Yeah, absolutely. we'll have you back to get the full full story. It's,
yeah, but yeah, that's the short version. So later on, you know, I just started making my way up the ranks. I was doing recording. You know what I'm saying? Me and Boog started making records, and I would say probably right after I took over the recording duties for the first Foreign Exchange album. After that, that's when they voted me in. They found me useful. That's when they found me useful.
So you kind of moved up the ranks from engineering to beat making.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was already beat making, but it was just, you know, Gopher. You know, you catch all the jokes because I'm the youngest. I was the youngest member as well. So, you know, I catch all the roasting, you know what I'm saying? I catch a little bit of hazing instead of third. But, you know, once we found out where I fit in at, that's when it was like, all right, you good.
You still get teased as the kid of the group?
Not anymore because not in Jamla. I'm no longer the youngest.
Ah. Beautiful. So
that goes to Ruben Vincent now. You know
nice.
What I mean?
So nice. Down to Ruben. Someone else takes it. Someone else takes the jokes.
Right. No, we still catch the jokes. The jokes just go around. That's never gonna not happen because we love to laugh, man. So, you know, we're a family. We enjoy ourselves. We enjoy each other. And we love to laugh and have a good time, man. So, you know, it keeps the vibe up. Keeps your mind sharp. Keeps the morale up.
Awesome. That sounds like a great place to end. Elzai Crisis. Yeah. Jericho Jackson.
Jericho.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right, good luck.
All right.
One of the things I love about doing the Cypher is getting a chance to talk to people who are masters at what they do. And in this case, I was talking to two of them at the same time. Getting Crisis's thoughts on samples and Elzai's on wordplay was almost too much for one show. I'm so glad to share it with you. Join us in 2 weeks when we have a very special show for you. We'll have a chat with Jonah Hill and a bunch of cast members from the new movie Hill wrote and directed, Mid-90s. If you like 90s hip-hop, skating, Odd Future, or movies, or just want to hear what it's like when I talk to the star of 22 Jump Street, make sure to tune in. As I said at the beginning, the best way to keep the show going is to give us some cash at patreon.com/thecyphershow. After you're done with that, go to iTunes and give us a rating and a review. This is what helps us keep doing the show. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Cypher Show. And don't forget, more information about this or any other episode, including playlists and a lot more, can be found at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Tataro.
I won't go into too much detail.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
No, this is a group.
Audio editing by Rob Van Vranken.
Just getting my feet wet out here.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
Flipping Case, we flipping SWV, flipping Jodeci. We just did that for a whole week.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
And it was confirmation that I'm in the right place doing the right thing.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Richard Van Zanten.
I didn't do it.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Definitely. Great.